All right. This is another in our ongoing series of explorations of the laws of life using the Tarot. The law we're focused on tonight is the divine law of imperfection, which may seem like an odd way to formulate it. It really tells us of the relationship of perfection to the perfection of spirit to the imperfection we find on earth. So the question is, what is the divine law of imperfection and how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards and laid out the spread, and we have the following spread. The Queen of Swords is the starting point, upside down. The King of Cups is the counterpoint, upside down. So we have a Queen and the King in the first two positions defining the subject. And then we have yet another King, our second King in a row, as the challenge, the King of Pentacles, right side up. We have, in the position of the purpose, we have the Wheel of Fortune right side up. Wheel of Fortune is number 10 in the major arcana, which, of course, condenses down into a 1. The endowment is the Two of Rods upside down. The destiny is the Five of Cups right side up. And then coming to the Pillar of Revelation, we have the Page of Swords as the real question, upside down. We have the Three of Cups as the hidden forces, upside down. We have the Ten of Swords, upside down, as the spiritual ideal. And we have the Ace of Pentacles, right side up, as the fulfillment. So that gives us 4 upright cards and 6 reverse cards. And I think the upright cards indicate what the origins of the law of imperfection are, and the upright cards are explain how an aspirant can best harness it. So let's get right into this. This experiment does not pretend to define the whole range of imperfection. That would be difficult. It's talking about it more as a learning tool, and the relationship between the outer and the inner levels of life. And in that sense, it's a very nice continuation on from what we were talking about with balance yesterday. The starting point is, as I said, is the Queen of Swords upside down. And the first thing to notice about the Queen of Swords is at the bottom of the card, which is actually the top of the card as it lays upside down, there is the symbolism of the residue of ancient evil. And in confronting this and conquering it and restricting it to a tiny little bit of the lower, right-hand corner, if it was upright, the Queen of Swords has demonstrated the capacity to convert imperfection into full flower, the 5 flowers at the hilt of her sword. And so this is what is happening here. This helps define the situation. The Queen represents the development of quality or refinement at the level of spirit. And she embodies the ability to control from sublime levels. I talked yesterday about the sublime and the slime. The slime would be the physical plane and the level of imperfection. And she's demonstrating the ability to do just that. And it also indicates something of the origins of imperfection. We worry about imperfection, and yet the upshot of this particular spread and this particular law is that we should not give imperfection so much notoriety in our life. We should not fear it. We should not worry about it. We should just get busy and redeem it. that the imperfections of life that cause disease and accidents and uncomfortable conditions on the face of the earth are leftover patterns that were produced in the previous solar system, as D.K. puts it, Alice Bailey puts it. And we just have, you know, we're born into a world in which disease occurs. So we have to cope with that. It's, there's much we can do to promote health and enlighten the dark areas of the globe. But this is what we're here to do. We're here to confront imperfection and find ways to render it perfect. So, the perfection is a process. It's not a result. It does not, you don't find perfection in form, as I've often said, because you can always do one better. You can always find a way to improve anything, any form. Perfection is the spiritual force that redeems life and rescues it from its being trapped in imperfection. And so we have to understand that the disease of human living, the diseases of human living, the banes of human living, the threats to human living, are not quite as monolithic as we tend to make it out to be. They are forces that pre-exist us. We're here to do our best to confront them and redeem them, not just individually, but as humanity. And as we approach life with quality and try to elevate the quality of our attitudes and our understanding and whatnot, we achieve this. Now, we gain a sense of control. But the important thing here is to understand that it's not really necessary for the personality to consciously cooperate with this. If there's a good relationship between the personality and the soul, it's the soul that is motivating the personality to grow and develop and expand. It's the soul that is busy working to fulfill, to redeem imperfection and fulfill its plan and design. Keep in mind that this particular topic, more than any of the other laws of life, illustrate the value of the divine plan, the spiritual design behind life, because without that type of design or ideal, it would be impossible to talk about rendering the imperfect more perfect. There would be no basis here. We have to be able to envision perfection, envision the ideal, and invoke it and walk in its light and companionship in order to make this fulfill the law of imperfection. But we have to accept the fact that we inherit this imperfection, and it's our work, our assignment is to come in here and find ways to the history of humanity has been devoted to this. We came in and worked hard scrabble pieces of land and made them bear vegetables and fruit and support our livingness on those tracks. But we had to often clear the land of trees and rocks and rubble before we could plant and cultivate and harvest the results. That's an example of the law of making the imperfect more perfect. And of course, this is much broader in context than you might think. The counterpoint is the King of Cups, and the King of Cups is this fellow, because this is a king, it represents mastery and authority. And this is a card that suggests that as we make our way in life, we take a responsibility for a certain amount of imperfection, and we do our best to render that more perfect. This is going out into the wilderness and saying, okay, I'm going to take these 40 acres and I'm going to clear them and I'm going to make a farm out of them, you see. And so in doing that, one becomes responsive and accountable and to the higher self. Or one could go out and say, I'm going to invent this, or I'm going to develop that. I'm going to develop these ideas. I'm going to learn to spread goodwill and compassion throughout the earth plane. Those are all legitimate symbols or forms of the law of imperfection. We go out, we find an imperfection, we find selfishness in the human family, we say, we can do better than that, and then devise ways and means to do better than that. That's the power of the law of imperfection. It's called the law of imperfection because the imperfection is there even before the perfection is. This is an ongoing project. You can say, well, doesn't the perfection reside in the spirit? Of course it does. But we're not quite sure where the imperfection came from. This is a vast, vast subject. And all we know is it's here, and we've got to deal with it in order to make life better. And so one way of thinking of this is to think of it in terms of the rays. Each ray, as it emanates out, has its own particular, as it influences humanity, it has its own weaknesses, its own lines of least resistance. Not that the rays cause imperfection, but human beings, as they respond to their ray type, create imperfection and perhaps aggressiveness or arrogance, whatever it might be, stubbornness, criticism. And these are elements of imperfection that we can then meet and overcome, and in the process of doing that, render the imperfect perfect. And so we have to understand that what I'm going off of here is the fact that the King of Cups is holding tightly to his cup. He has seized his opportunity, which in the beginning was negative, but he's gradually, by making it his own, converting it from the imperfect to the perfect. This goes on a little bit more as we go up to the creative challenge, the King of Pentacles. Here we have the king looking at us and behind him the bull staring through him, or ready to charge and run up his back. And again, he's created a domain of influence, a sphere of influence that fills his whole torso, except for a tiny bit of that refined pattern down at the bottom of the circle. And that's the ancient imperfection. And he's motivated from some driving force within the bull to expand his sphere of influence, to conquer and civilize, to expand his dominion over the residue of ancient evil. And this is a mysterious part of our purpose on earth, and therefore we shouldn't personalize our difficulties and sufferings, our problems, our imperfections very much, because they're just like math problems. It's here. It's what we can do. The fact that we become aware of something that's not quite right, it should be a sign that we have the skill and the interest and are on the wavelength to help solve that problem. And so if we understand that, we can understand that this is a, the earth plane is a perfect incubator for what we have to do. We come down here then to the Wheel of Fortune. And this is the only card of the major arcana in the whole spread. Very, very relevant because it reminds us that our planet is bathed and shaped by energies coming from far, far away, and we don't know how far away or how close. But there are planets and orbs and great intelligences that shape human life, and this is beyond our comprehension, beyond our capacity. We just know that this happens. And some of those energies are defined as zodiacal energies. Others are ray energies. There are energies of, again, it's rude for us to think that the earth was the very first part of any kind of divine experiment. It is of importance to us, but we have to assume that there were antecedents. We don't know what those antecedents are, but we can understand that they exist. I was reading on the internet today that scientists had discovered a 4,000-year-old brain, human brain, that had been preserved by a series of odd incidents. It was in Turkey somewhere, and a volcano erupted, I think, and set the whole town, leveled the whole town. Everybody was buried under rubble. And then it caused a massive fire, and everybody was charred beyond recognition. But in the process of doing that, it created a chemical combination which basically preserved the brain intact for 4,000 years until it was discovered a few years ago during an archaeological dig. And they're just now processing this and discovering things about it, but they're able to evaluate and analyze it. Well, that 4,000 years is not all that long of a period of time when you come to the real history of Earth, but it's remarkable for what the science can go back and understand some of these things and some of these antecedents and the development of the human consciousness over this period of time. So we're constantly confronting our past, or God's past, if you want to put it that way, the past of the earth. And we're helped to discover these things so that we can understand how different conditions came in and influenced life on earth and life in our consciousness. And we individually start with a clean slate each lifetime, but humanity doesn't start with a clean slate. We have the historical aspects of life on Earth and life on other planets before that have been carried over and used to create the garden we call the Earth. So we need to understand that the life we deal with is shaped constantly by extra systemic forces, zodiacal forces, forces from the distant past, whatever. And this is all within the context of divine consciousness, the divine individual. Again, we don't understand what that means, but how we can benefit from this is to understand that imperfection does not accrue in our life just to insult us or because we've done something desperately wrong. In some cases, it might mean that. But in the vast majority of cases, we're here on assignment. And as our individual life, our personal life intersects with the life of the planet, the life of mankind, it's to give us an opportunity to play our part with stern resolve and redeem these things. Now, we come then to the endowment and the two of rods. And we have here a fellow. This is the only rod or card of the mind in this spread. In fact, there was one major and one rod, three swords, three cups, and two pentacles, as you probably have figured out. And the key here is understanding that we can't look at life in part. We have to look for the whole, the entirety, the globe, the sphere. And we have to grasp the wholeness of the situation. And imperfection only exists as stages in creativity. It's our work to be kind of a midwife to help the developing creativity, the developing perfection, improve itself. And that's a tremendously noble work. And that's what we're here to do. So we should not... there's a tremendous temptation, of course, to personalize all this. Many of these things are forces, not form, and they don't exist as form. And we can be grateful for that in many cases. But we have to learn to deal with them as forces in mass consciousness and the consciousness of the divine life, whatever it is, angelic force. There's a lot of things that there are any number of forces. There are forces that we're meant to work with creatively. There are other forces that we're meant to view with respect and not try to harness them. So we have to be able to see where we're guided, where we're directed, and pursue that and leave the rest of it alone. Then this leads over to the Five of Cups in the position of the destiny, card of destiny. And, of course, we have the reeds that symbolize wildness and the birds flying in the sky, alarmed by somebody with a shotgun shooting into the sky. Whatever it might be, they're flying away from the scene. And the individual is looking at three cups that are spilled on the ground and viewing them as loss. But of course, it's not a loss, it's an investment. It's nurturing the soil and causing growth. This whole pattern of the person is an etched on the back of his cloak is the chevron of conflict. And we'll see that again on the next card, the Page of Swords. He's got that same chevron pattern on his sleeve. And the Ten of Swords has the same thing. So again, conflict occurs as we perhaps misinterpret the meaning of imperfection or rebel against it and say, we can do better than this. And that sets up a conflict that we, this is one of the imperfections we have to deal with in our life, is we're constantly coming into conflict, opposition to new ideas, to old patterns, old traditions, and we have to detach from them and make our own way. So this is, instead of seeing things as a loss, we should see them as an investment that, in fact, we don't have individual possessions such as the King of Cups suggests. We have shared possessions. And our real life is that which comes to us from the soul, not what the personality can accrue and garner. So the under the law, divine law of imperfection, the law basically is stating that something sublime can always be extracted or produced from the primordial slime. And humanity's history here on Earth has been one of doing just that. And all of the great creations of art and science, all of the great discoveries of human exploration are the testament to our capacity to work in response to this law of imperfection. Okay, I'm going to pause here on the card of destiny and entertain any comments or questions anybody might have before we go on to the pillar of revelation. Anybody? Any comments or questions thus far?
Carl, as you were talking, reading the destiny of the nations, when you first start reading that, you know, you think negatively a little bit about just what was going on in the world at that time. But as I continued to read, especially about the race, there was a sense of peace, and that this plan is so immense, and an understanding that these rays do come in, there's higher and lower, and that it is a matter of a very long time and process for this to fulfill itself, and that, you know, we are a part of it, but not to worry about every incident or, you say, every imperfection or every failure, because we don't yet see the meaning in an apparent failure,
right,
when we're in the process of it. So this whole reading just, to me, it fits in so perfectly. And then I was thinking of Babylon 5, which I'm watching.
Good.
I've never seen the entire series. And I think the presence of these other planets, and that there are benevolent planets, and that in one of the episodes, the captain, I always forget the name of all the different races, but there's this one man on a planet, and he's like isolated, and he looks at the captain and says, "You are getting help. You're doing a good job." So it's almost like these beings are spiritual and connecting with Earth and trying to teach them in a way.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
Tonight, it's just basically where I've been in the last week or so.
Okay. Good. Good. Well, it's nice to know that one can overcome imperfection even in Albuquerque. Good. Any other comments or questions? Well, going on then to the pillar of revelation, we come to the seventh card, the real question, the page of swords. And the page of swords reminds us that it's by confronting imperfection and finding ways to resolve it that we learn and grow. And the page is one of those individuals who rushes in where angels fear to tread. And but in the process of doing that, he gets himself into all kinds of trouble, but then in sorting it out, actually learns a great deal and learns to profit from the conflict. So conflict is one of those ancient patterns brought over from somewhere else. And it doesn't matter where it came from or which great being got all tied up in and of himself in conflict, but it characterizes human life and why we are propelled into conflict so readily and take insult and so on so facilely. But the it reminds us that we're not, you know, this is a perplexing situation. There's nothing simplistic about it. If it was just a case of if we came into life and we found ourselves, it's like the settling of this country. People came over here and it was a vast wilderness with a few nomadic tribes of Indians to greet them. And basically the settlers had to come in. There were no Holiday Inns or Days Inn or anything for them to rest their weary bones as they traveled out to Ohio and New Mexico and Kansas and places. They had to create their own wayside inns. They had to establish their own civilization. And then they got out there and they had to cut down trees and carry rocks and whatnot in order to just be able to plow the land and grow food. And this was, so what I'm saying is that our encounter with imperfection is not where we're given a mule and 40 acres or whatever to say, here's all you need, go do it. We have to go out and we have to clear the land. We have to build our own sense of establishment and domain. And this is true regardless of the problem or the issue. For example, energy. We now understand that oil is a tremendous source of energy. We have political points of view about it, but we understand that there is all this oil and it can be converted into gasoline and other forms of energy and other substances. And there are other possibilities for energy. But the point is that humanity lived on this earth for eons and eons before anybody discovered that oil had this magical power, or even developed the chemistry to understand that oil is a carbon-based product, and almost everything on the face of the earth is carbon-based. And if we could understand that, we could work with the oil, distill it so that we could convert it into fuel and plastics and all different kinds of wonderful things. Humanity had to come and figure that out. Now, it wasn't all alone. Humanity had the help of the higher self, the soul, the help of spirit in figuring that out. Little clues were dropped in the, you know, why would this, you know, I can just see, you mentioned the Beverly Hillbillies the other day. Here were these folks living on a piece of property in West Virginia somewhere, and all this black guck came bubbling up, and they looked at it and said, ugh, that's going to ruin the value of the land. And then some oil company prospector came along, geologist, and said, say, that's oil. I represent a company that could use that. Why don't we give you about $100 million and we'll buy your property from you? Now, that couldn't have happened 200, 250 years ago. It happened once humanity figured out that oil was good. And that's in spite of the fact that it looks like anything but good.
Slime.
Yeah, it's slime. This is your perfect example of producing something sublime out of the slime. And there was a great deal of help and coaching from the inner levels on that one, in general, and still is. And, of course, our capacity to tap energy sources on the planet, we think we're doing something great, drilling 5 miles down to get oil. And yet, how far is it down to the core of the Earth? About 12,000 miles. And that's where the real energy lies, in the core of the Earth. So we've got a lot of discovering that we can do here, a lot of lessons to learn. We should, in the spirit of the two of rods, it's not enough to be able to separate the whole sphere, the orb, from the part, but we have to put it in the context of, okay, what potential lies beneath the Earth's crust? What potential lies in the oceans? We know that the Earth is covered, two-thirds of the Earth is covered by water, and there's a tremendous resource of water. How can we harness that? How can we use that? What is the potential there? And what is the potential in the winds? And all these different elements of life that we have here. This is where the very things that we might view as imperfect, right now, this morning or over the weekend, we were told down here that the tropical storm Karen was going to probably become an earth hurricane and come ashore and wreak havoc. Well, it whimpered out, of course. And we got a little bit of rain, but not even very much of that. And yet there were winds that came along with it. And what do we do with the wind? Well, we stay out of the wind. At this point, the wind is more of a problem than an asset to us. But if we learned how to harness the wind, we might be able to convert it into energy. After all, we have windmills. We've figured out windmills a long time ago in Holland and other places around the continent. So there are all different kinds of resources, nuclear energy, et cetera. Our first development of nuclear energy was for military bang, and that became a problem, a political problem, and we became afraid of it. But there have been countries like France that have harnessed nuclear energy very safely and use it to generate their energy. And so out of imperfection comes perfection. This is the trademark of human growth, human creativity, human development, the inquiring human mind. We want to know, what is that sticky black substance called oil really good for? We want to know that. And when we find that out, it can release tremendous activities, tremendous possibilities for transforming civilization on the planet Earth. One of the discoveries Rose and I made not too long ago, we have a little village festival over here every Saturday morning close by Big Canoe, and all these vendors come out and offer their wares. And one of the ones that we discovered recently was a little booth that was selling lettuce, but not just any lettuce. It was lettuce that was grown hydroponically. So it was grown in water, and the instead of soil, it was fed nutrients through a special formula, and these things grow incredibly. So a head of bib lettuce actually was the size of a basketball. When you buy bib lettuce grown normally in the store, it's about the size of a softball. But this ball of bib lettuce, I wouldn't want to play basketball with it, but it was about that size. And they grow kale, and they grow a spring mix, which is fascinating because they grow all these different types of lettuce, all in the same basic ball of lettuce. And it grows that way. And then they just pull it out of position in their system that is growing it, nurturing it, and they package it up and sell it. And we went over, this was being done locally. We found out that these people were on our normal path. And so we've gone over there a couple of times and seen their setup, and it's remarkable that instead of going outside and, trying to grow lettuce in the green outdoors, limited as it is to the seasons, they have a year-round operation in which they grow the lettuce hydroponically. Now, they didn't invent the process. Somebody else invented the process, and they bought it and use it. But that's something that is relatively new in human agriculture or horticulture or something culture, and it has tremendous possibilities. This is what human beings do. When they get tired of clearing the rocks and the trees off of a piece of ground so they can grow things there, they build greenhouses and import water so that they can grow lettuce hydroponically. This is the process of, this is what makes life on Earth so wonderful and unpredictable. Well, it's predictable in a lot of ways because it's a question of what the hierarchy is going to emphasize for human growth, and it's determined by race and a lot of other things. But it's unpredictable because we have to learn these lessons. We have to develop the wisdom and the intuitive insight to be able to see the potential within something that's never existed before, except as a problem. How do you feed the millions? Well, maybe you don't need that much land. Maybe you just need a few greenhouses and hydroponics. So the real question is, what are we learning from any situation in life? How can we turn this around and make it creative? What limitations are we bouncing our head off of and bruising our head as we keep on assuming that the same limitations always exist? How do we go beyond this limitation? What is the conflict? What is the opposition? And how can we transform this from a problem into an opportunity? So that's the Page of Swords. This is all the reasons for the importance of learning and developing and sharing one's wisdom. Then we come to the Three of Cups. This is another intriguing card here because we have three women toasting one another or toasting some larger element with their cups of wine or whatever's in their cups. And behind them is this humongous sunflower. And so obviously the context here is they're toasting the larger life in which they live, the larger life of beauty, perhaps the larger life of something. And, this is a wonderful depiction of companionship. What I talk about, we need to view our life as a companionship with the spiritual realms of life. And if you think of those three women or three agents as representing the monad, the soul, and the individual, you get an idea of what true companionship is between the inner and the outer. And this is goes back to the King of Pentacles and that capacity to expand the sphere of one's influence. As you, we may be caught up in certain limitations. We might be in a certain country. We might be in a certain mindset or occupation and unable to see beyond, much beyond our limitations. But if we look beyond it and use our imagination, we can expand the scope of our influence tremendously. And so one person in one country can transform conditions so that people are liberated in other countries. And humanity grows in this way and shares. And we need to do the same thing in our own life and not get trapped in our personal limitations, but understand and not do combat against imperfection, but understand that our challenge is to find ways to harness imperfection and transform it into perfection, into something better. To take a 1920 Model T and turn it into a 1930 Model T. And then that becomes the basis for a 1940 Model T. In the same way in our country, to take the principles that this country is founded on and transform them into something that is a dynamic structure for our society today. And that this society will grow and change, and but it's always looking for different, better ways to organize itself. Okay, so that's the idea of the larger life. We're a point within a larger life, that sunflower behind there. And this is what we've been talking about here. Yes, there's imperfection down here, but it's only here so that we can stumble across and bruise our knees and say, there must be a better way, and then invent footwear that keeps us from stumbling, whatever it is. And it may be something in form, it may be something practical and useful, it may be something quite abstract and philosophical. Then we come to the spiritual ideal, the Ten of Swords. And this is our famous psychic pincushion. There's all this spiritual force coming down, and it's nailed this guy to the desert floor. And, of course, it looks like he's dead, but he isn't really. He's just connected. He's well connected. Yes, the desert is barren and needs to be transformed, but he's connected himself with spirit, so he's going to be inspired and able to transform the residue of conflict and ancient evil that is so visible on his arm and around his belt area. He's going to be able to convert those into perfection, something better, something more useful, something. And keep in mind that while we are obsessed with healing disease and improving the comforts of life, many of the imperfections of life are more abstract. They're energies that we have to learn to harness. And one of the problems we have is, for example, in our modern day and age, is that we often focus intellectual energy into doubt and nihilism. And so that's a good example of where we need to recognize the imperfection of that doubt and nihilism and replace it with light and possibility, optimism. And there's tremendous strides yet to be made there. Of course, every government, every religion is trying to influence those things, every philosophy. But we have perhaps gotten off the track a little bit in modern times and forgotten how important the link with spirit really is. Okay, so we then come to the final conclusion, the card of fulfillment. And we have the Ace of Pentacles, which is the symbol of the physical plane itself. And in many cases, we talk about the ideal of the physical plane as productivity. In this case, I think we want to use the religious terminology a little bit more and recognize that the physical plane is a plane of latent glory. We're here to create glory. Glory embodies the perfection of spirit and releases it on earth. This glory is foreshadowed by the beauty of the Three of Cups, the beauty of the sunflower behind the three women. And so everything we do is aimed at producing glory and beauty and light on earth. And this is to the glory of God, not to the glory of individual humans. We play our part. We come, we go. We go away for a while. We come back again, revisit the planet Earth. But every lifetime gives us a unique way of enriching life around us and achieving that glory out of imperfection. And notice how organized this symbol is with all the fancy filigree and everything holding up the pentacle. And contrast that to the patterns of the residue of ancient evil that we find here in the King of Pentacles at the bottom and the Queen of Swords at the bottom and the wildness of the Five of Cups and so on. What we're really trying to do with each successive generation is organize the work of humanity more and more so that it is capable of responding to the spiritual influences and spiritual urges and drives. And that lets us tap an unlimited potential. We know all about imperfection, although we may not have discovered it all. We know that things are not perfect on earth. We know that things are not what they might be. What we don't know is that this is not something we created. It's something we inherited. It's our responsibility to take charge of this and resolve it, improve it, But we have great help and assistance from Spirit in doing this. And we are, even though at times it's as clear as mud, going back to the slime, we are guided and we are led, and humanity through all of its resistance and false directions manages to do some pretty remarkable things, such as hydroponic lettuce. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain further comments and questions on the divine law of imperfection and the enormously fruitful role it plays in human living. And of course, all of this is in the context of understanding that yes, there are diseases, there are limitations of the life on the earth plane, but if we proceed with companionship, the personality is guided and inspired by the higher self, guided to into the proper line of work and guided to reveal what can be known. Again, comments, questions, input. Anybody?
Carl.
Dorothy.
This is such a great overview of something to really think about for our daily lives, for sort of the broader picture of conflict in the world. And it's such an excellent insight into kind of plodding along and figuring things out in our lives. It's just so inspiring to get this background information.
Good. Good. Well, you've touched on an important point, and that is that there is conflict. There are inequities in human living. It is, and many people take these far too seriously and despair and wring their hands and mutter dark things and whatnot. And none of that is necessary. If there was what we as spiritual aspirants must do is achieve a certain level of detachment so we can understand, okay, there are things happening in Washington, sure. There are things happening in Syria, sure. And I'm damn glad I'm not there. But these are things that have happened in the past that are happening because, you know, one of the naive assumptions that people make is, well, we can have a war to end all wars. Now, talk about naive. I've got a bridge I would like to sell those people. I could probably get a pretty good price for it. The point is that it's naive simply because there is something called karma. And so there are people out there that have karmic problems of rape and murder and mayhem that they have to work out. And banning all the guns on the face of the earth aren't going to do that because I don't think you use a gun in rape. I don't know from any direct personal experience, but that's my understanding of the situation. So a lot of times we get hysterical and bent out of shape about things we can't control. And in fact, what I'm talking about tonight, most of that we can't control. But the way we can interact with this law is to understand there are things we can't control. We can't control the winds and the hurricanes and the volcanoes and whatnot, but we can make sure that we don't build our home on the edge of a volcanic mountain and wait for it to erupt. We can understand that that's a natural part of life. We can try to harness the human understanding of weather is remarkable compared to 100 years ago, but it's nothing compared to what it'll be 1,000 years from now if we apply ourselves to it. And there are massive secrets that can be uncovered through the study of of the weather. And we need to understand that we're just scratching the surface of potential and possibility. So we must not be afraid of imperfection. We must not be afraid of making mistakes. We should not even be afraid of failing. Because what is failing in the long run? Almost every great success and breakthrough has come as a result of initial failure. And so we need to revise our thinking on this and give ourselves the freedom to succeed as we interact with imperfection. The imperfection is here. We inherit it. It's up to us to do something creative with it. Other comments or questions?
Well, Carl, I was thinking of a toddler or even a little younger than that, you know, born into different kinds of families, different parental influence, and yet there's something in a toddler, you can't deter them, and you can watch them, and even if you know they're going to maybe fall down the stairs or, you know, get into trouble, they're determined to figure it out and to explore, and you almost want them sometimes to make those mistakes to learn. And you can be the certain kind of parent and want a certain kind of child, but there's something within that child that is beyond you. You know, they're going to be who they're going to be, and it's a good thing.
Sure.
Good thing.
Well, this is the way the masters and the hierarchy and the members of the ashrams and whatnot view humans, with a great deal of love and affection for their potential. And an encouragement to go forth and explore. And if you fall down and skin your knees, so be it. Next time, learn to listen to your spooks before you go out walking. They'll remind you of things to do. We were about to drive by a store we had earlier determined to stop in this afternoon, and Rose suddenly said, "Oh, got to go in there." And I had forgotten completely. I was reading a novel for the benefit of both of us, and I was absorbed in that. And it was this, you know, we are meant to be companions, and this is an integral part of imperfection. We're not thrown down here into the deep end and ignored and forgotten. We're meant to develop skills and call upon help from the spirit to make it possible for us to make our way, to heal our illnesses, to overcome imperfection, and so on and so on. Anybody else? Any other comments? Well, that's it for tonight and this particular exploration. I want to thank you all, and to all a good night.